It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Wisconsin Appeals Court Judge Lisa Neubauer has thrown her hat in the race for state Supreme Court justice. She is using the team that got Rebecca Dallet elected a few months ago. But Neubauer is not affiliating with any party. Justices, she says are neutral. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel state government reporter Molly Beck wrote about Neubauer, and she joins us now. Welcome, Molly.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So talk to us about who Neubauer is.
So Judge Lisa Neubauer, she is the chief judge for the state appeals court, and that means that she oversees the entire state's court of appeals, and she is the highest-ranking judge outside of the Supreme Court. She was appointed in 2007 by Governor Jim Doyle, a Democrat, and before that she was in private practice. You're right, she's saying that she is not affiliated with a political party, but I would note that most Supreme Court candidates say that, but end up getting most of their support from one side of the aisle or the other.
So is that because they, is it a I need money to run and these people are going to support me, so I'll ask them for money kind of thing? Is it that most Supreme Court candidates have a specific decision that some people like? I mean, how does that come out?
So since outside groups are allowed to spend money in these races, even though the Supreme Court elections are officially nonpartisan, the candidates don't run as a Democrat or Republican or any other kind of party. But because of the outside groups are allowed to spend money, usually the candidates that make it to, you know, if there are more than two candidates, the candidates that make it through the primary are usually ones that the groups that are affiliated with an ideology feel that they might vote the way they want them to on the court. And I'm not saying that the judges end up doing that, but that's at the time of the election, that's the expectation by some of these groups, and that's why they spend so much money. And that money helps them get elected.
So as you said, Neubauer's been on the appeals court since 2007, and she is the chief of the appeals court, so she's right. Just under the Supreme Court. Can we suss out where she stands on issues by some of her previous opinions?
But in the appeals court, it's a bit tougher to do because they are taking up cases that have already been decided and ruling on, you know, whether or not they think it was properly decided. So I don't know that looking at her work on the appeals court is going to give voters any kinds of clues to how she might operate on the Supreme Court, because it's just a different situation.
Right.
But I think, you know, once the election gets going, just the way she talks, voters will be able to, you know, get some kind of clues about where she stands on something.
So she's got Rebecca Dallet's campaign team working for her. What do you read into that?
So that would tell voters that, you know, she might be the kind of justice that Rebecca Dallet told voters she would be. And that campaign team is usually affiliated with Democrats. So, We can probably anticipate that Judge Neubauer will be perceived to be backed by Democrats or liberal-leaning. But again, because it's nonpartisan and she is a judge, so she's supposed to be impartial, we'll see how, as the campaign goes on, we'll be able to get a better clue.
You cover judges a lot. Do you hear frustration from them that they're being partisanized? I don't know if that's a word, but I'm using it.
Yeah, I think I've covered a few Supreme Court races, and that is a chief criticism from almost every candidate that runs, and something you hear from voters that they feel like the court in recent years has, everything's done through an ideological lens, and whether or not that's fair is another matter, you know, but because the outside groups spend in these races, I think voters get the perception that it's just another political race, and I'm not saying they're wrong either, because the outside groups do spend,
right.
So the candidates.
So Neubauer, though, has said she doesn't want to take any outside spending, and she's calling for other candidates not to take outside spending. How realistic is that?
She's asking these groups not to spend in the race. I don't know if that's realistic, and I don't know if the outside groups would heed that advice. And if they don't, if she will accept the money or not accept the money, because she can't accept it or reject it. But she might. We'll see if she'll publicly denounce the money if it's being spent on her behalf.
Interesting. So her campaign, she's the first one to say, hey, I want to run for the seat, correct?
Yes, officially, yes.
Okay, who unofficially is thinking that they might want to be a justice?
So we've heard that another state appeals court judge, Brian Hagedorn, is also considering a run. He is the former chief legal counsel to Governor Scott Walker and would be backed by conservatives and Republicans if he gets in the race. We've also heard the name of Waukesha County Judge Maria Lazar, who's also people would perceive her to be a conservative judge or justice too. And Jefferson County District Attorney Susan Happ, who is a Democrat, she also said that she is looking at a run. And the last time I spoke with her, she said that because she is not a judge and has not been a judge, she's kind of just floating her name out there to see if voters would support her run anyway.
So give me a sense. Shirley Abrahamson has been on this court for a long time. When did she first get appointed or when?
She was appointed back in the 70s, I believe. She's been on the court for a very long time. And she announced that she was resigning a few weeks ago, and that I think some people were wondering if she would, if she was not going to seek another term, if she would wait until December, which might make it harder for somebody to, get a campaign together by January. But a few weeks ago, she said that, she's not going to seek another term. She didn't say that it had anything to do with her health, but she has had some health issues in recent weeks and months, which has caused her to work from home. She's done a few overseen a few oral arguments by phone in recent months.
So January, you said January. We are not voting for this in November. We're doing a separate vote. Oh, God, that's frustrating. Okay, why?
The Supreme Court elections are held every April. So, and there's one every year because the justices are up every year. So, we won't be voting for this for quite a while.
So after November, we have to then go back to the polls in April, and I bet you less people show up.
spring elections are generally, there's very low turnout in those elections. And if we have a primary, there will be even lower turnout.
So what are you watching next on this beat, Molly?
Well, I think we're waiting to see, who the other candidates are. There's surely going to be another candidate, at least one other candidate. There might even be two. Usually there's coalescing around one candidate who is perceived to be the conservative candidate, and that I haven't seen that yet. And that'll be the next thing that we're looking for.
Molly Beck is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She covers state government and politics, and she's been talking to us today about the first person to put her name into the ring for a Supreme Court seat, a state Supreme Court seat. Molly, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. I love this music. We're now going to take a look at our state capitol report today about this $3.4 million settlement the city of Milwaukee made with the ACLU over stop and frisk policies. What do you think about this settlement? Is there something police around the state can do to avoid this kind of lawsuit in the future? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to give a prize to people who tweet us because we're trying to get more tweets. At WPR Mornings. I don't know what the prize will be, but I'll figure it out. Mary Spicuzza is a politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's going to talk us through this right now. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
So what was this lawsuit about and when was it filed?
So this was a lawsuit that was actually filed back in February 2017 by ACLU of Wisconsin and several other plaintiffs. And this was basically people who accused the Milwaukee police of routinely stopping really thousands of people of color without cause. That's the accusation. Obviously, the city fought that accusation, but they said that it was essentially racial profiling.
Okay, so the ACLU sued Milwaukee. Who else was involved in this suit?
So there were plaintiffs who said that they had been stopped and frisked and racial profiled. They also targeted the former police chief, Chief Edward Flynn, who is no longer with the department, and Milwaukee police. And actually, the city tried to get the lawsuit thrown out at one point, saying that, you know, arguing they have a new chief now who has different policies, and essentially the lawsuit should not be allowed to go forward because the former police chief had gone. The judge did not see it that way, so the lawsuit was allowed to continue, which really ultimately led to this, helped lead to this settlement.
So I'm trying to figure out kind of like how much the sides compromised on this. The decision to settle happened in the Milwaukee Common Council. So first, remind us what that is.
Sure. So the Milwaukee Common Council are typically 15 members, although one has taken the job with the administration, so it's currently 14. But essentially, it's like city council members. So they pass or don't pass things that then go to the mayor for his signature. So they essentially decided to settle on the advice of their city attorney, who said that essentially the financial risks of this lawsuit, the cost of fighting it could have climbed far, far higher than the amount that they ultimately settled for. And so his advice was essentially settle this before you end up spending millions and millions of dollars fighting this in court.
Okay, so that millions and millions of dollars would have gone to attorney's fees and preparations and things like that, or would have gone to the plaintiffs?
Right. It could have gone. They were saying that it was the amount that was spent so far, the $1.9 million that's going towards the settlement, was for attorney fees. And obviously they're hiring experts. There are a lot of costs involved in litigation, and those can really start to pile up.
So what did the ACLU initially want on behalf of its clients, and what did it give up in this settlement?
So the ACLU agreed to cap the consultant fees, which became a real sticking point in this case at one point, where it looked like they were going to settle potentially back in May. And then what happened was they came together for a meeting where they realized that the cost of this consultant who would be helping the city and helping the police department comply was climbing and could reach $3.5 million or more. And at that point, they realized that this could be a more than $6 million settlement. And so things stalled at that point as they tried to reach an agreement and negotiate an amount that they could all be comfortable with. And so they've gone with a different consultant, not the original Chicago-based consultant that they had planned, but a different one. And those fees will now be capped at $1.5 million rather than the $3.5 million. So that's obviously a big difference.
Okay, so we have $1.9 million that is going to defendants and $1.5 million that is going to consultants.
So $1.9 million is going to
attorney plaintiffs.
Fees.
Okay.
Yeah, the attorney fees from the plaintiffs. And then $1.5 million will be for the consultant. And, you know, the ACLU was saying all along that this wasn't about money. This was about forcing policy changes. Obviously, when it's millions of dollars, money is something that's going to be on the forefront of city leaders' minds.
True, but so the people that were the co-plaintiffs in this, are they getting anything?
So there are some other separate lawsuits that involve like body cavity searches, but the plaintiffs again were saying that we want change. We're not after money. So you know, obviously the ACLU will have to negotiate where that $3.4 million is going, but it is technically supposed to be $1.9 million for attorney's fees and about $1.5 million, a little more, for the consultants.
We are talking to Mary Spicuzza about this $3.4 million settlement the city of Milwaukee made with the ACLU over stop and frisk policies. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. This body cavity thing is interesting to me. So this is not the only lawsuit that is happening.
Exactly. There have been multiple lawsuits against the city of Milwaukee. Some of my colleagues recently reported that the cost of lawsuits since like 2015, so really the last 3 years, has really expanded and now reached beyond $22 million. So there have been lawsuits following the death of Dontre Hamilton, obviously, which was well reported. Mm-hmm. There were body cavity searches, which have been are being settled as well. So, yeah, the city is obviously in tough budget times. They are spending a lot of money on police misconduct lawsuits, and it's something that they, you know, argued, and especially like Alderwoman Coggs made this point on the floor, that hopefully this consultant and these changes will help prevent future lawsuits from being filed. Because obviously I think any city leader, whether they're critical of the police or, you know, local advocates of the police, don't want to be spending this kind of money on police misconduct lawsuits.
One of the things that I find interesting is that the plaintiffs wanted this to change. Do you see, you know, we have a different administration now. I want to get to the point of, do you see this changing?
Well, I certainly think that is the hope of everybody involved, although there was a point that came up among aldermen, especially some of the alders who are really vocal advocates of police, who said, well, I don't think this was racial profiling. They argued that it was just poorly documented stops.
Okay, so we're going to get to that in a moment. We've got to take a break. We're talking about that $3.4 million payout by Milwaukee for its police policies, specifically its stop and frisk policies. We're going to talk about how those policies might change or not with Mary Spicuzza in a moment. It's The Morning Show.